We're just getting started in Joshua, so this is just kind of like introductory material we'll be going through today. But for your cultural enrichment, this is a picture that was done by a guy named Giovanni Lanfranco. He was a Baroque painter and everything. He lived from about 1547, I wrote down the numbers on this guy, 1547 to 1461 to 1647, something like that. Get my numbers right. He was about 60 or so when he passed away. I'll get my numbers straight, sorry. I know I had him in here. Let's see. Yeah, sorry, hon. Yeah, something like that. He was a Baroque painter, Italian painter. But this was one of the drawings, or one of the paintings he had made, and this is simply depicting Caleb and Joshua coming back and talking to Aaron and Moses after the spies had gone in. They're reporting back to him all that they had found. But as far as the things that are going on during Joshua's time, the time frame is roughly 1400 BC. This is going to be the end of the Bronze Age and the beginning of the Iron Age. There's a town called Knossos. It's the capital of Crete. And the big thing that happens there is the whole town burns down. There's a significant fire there and it burns down. Pottery is at its technical peak. We have the silk industry in China that's just getting started. And then the empires, the big powers of that time, were Mesopotamia, Egypt, and the Hittites. And Rafat, I have to admit, your people did a great job of detailing who's in power. Because when I went through and looked at all the leaders, you got all the Imhotepsand all this kind of stuff all lined out. They did a great job, man. They were pretty much a ruling power then, so they were pretty tough. The other thing to point out about Canaan is that they were a bunch of city-states in that whole Canaanite area, and they all kind of bickered with one another. It wasn't a real stable structure, and so there was a lot of infighting and arguing and contesting that went on at that time. There was one town that was kind of significant. It's called Ur-Garit. But it was way north of Canaan, at least as we think about the Promised Land and everything. But it was a seaport, and it was kind of at its big impact or big time for them. But the thing to point out about that those guys is that as they studied and did all the archaeological work, they found that there were five forms of writing that were used within that town, and there were roughly eight languages that were being spoke throughout that place. So there was a lot of division, a lot of culture that went on at that time in Ur-Garit. But Canaan was affected in terms of a lot of different cultures, a lot of different languages, a lot of different writings that were going on at that time. Yeah, it's on the Mediterranean, the Great Sea, the Mediterranean Sea, but it was way north of that, right, Pastor? Oh, okay. Well, it's going to be destroyed about 1200 BC or so. It's going to be wiped out. But it's been there since about 6000. At least that's what the smart guys say. Okay. Anything else on here? Nothing else. So Joshua's given name was Hoshea, meaning salvation. But Moses is going to change his name from Hoshea to Joshua, which means God is salvation or Yahweh saves. Now then, what's significant about this is Joshua is going to be the first person to have the term Yahweh incorporated into his name. I didn't put it up there, but when Moses changes his name, that's when he comes back from the spy trip and reveals all the good stuff about Canaan. That's when Moses changes his name to Joshua. And then Joshua is from the tribe of Ephraim. And I did that, and I didn't even mean to do this, guys. I had handouts for you guys. Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 4. I can give you a couple more. One for the kids down there. Sorry about that. Oh, thanks, sir. Anyone need an extra one? We're good. So The first thing I wanted to put on here is that Joshua was a descendant of who?
None.
Do what?
None.
I know that's the joke, isn't it? Who's the only character in the Bible with no parents? Yeah, Joshua, son of Nun.
That was Nun as a Nun from a monster.
Do what? It is N-U-N, but that's the joke part of it, you know. But that's who Joshua is. He was born in Egypt during the captivity portion. Some of what I read about Joshua suggests that Moses, that he was employed by the Egyptians in their army and in their fighting and that kind of thing. And that's what attracted Moses to having Joshua as a leader for his technical expertise on fighting and that kind of thing. So that's maybe part of Joshua's background. That's just a guess from the experts. This is just a simple map, and it's more of an eye chart, I'm sorry about that, of the area that those guys are going to be in. Let me see if I can Alt-Tab over to it. No, where are you? Dadgum you. Somehow I lost it. Well, it's hard to tell here, guys, but I will try and point this out to you. Can y'all see where Jericho is right above my hand? There's like Ai and Jericho. That's roughly, if you look at distance, it's about 5 miles from the Jordan River, kind of like to the east of it. If you go, or to the west, yeah, to the east of it. If you go 5 miles the other direction, just directly west, then you're going to run into what to Shittim, and that's where the guys were camped. So where Joshua opens up, they're encamped at, did I bother you? No. My daughter. So that's where the guys are camped out right now. Again, they're about 10, 12 miles away from Jericho itself, but directly east of them, across the Jordan River. Okay. Before I get started on this too, I tried thinking of historical characters that would kind of fall into what Joshua is going to be going through. Because Moses is dead. Y'all know this part. As the story opens up, Moses is dead. And here's Joshua going to take his place. And I was trying to think of historical leaders that have fallen into that. And can y'all think of any that have had kind of big shoes to fill?
Washington.
No, but he didn't have some successor that he was falling in after. Pardon? Grant wasn't that great. I'm sorry, and this is coming from the South, so yeah. Pardon? Well, that's, you're more godly than I am, Steve. Now, that's someone I thought about, but the thing about Johnson is he was considerably older than Kennedy. And Johnson had all his Southern cronies and all this kind of stuff. Where the guy I thought about was Truman. And that's because, you know, under the Roosevelt administration, he was the vice president that kind of had to step in and take over after Roosevelt passes away. Now, a completely side note that doesn't have anything to do with this. I thought that Truman was always his vice president. Little did I know. The first 8 years were who, Ron? Do you remember? Who was the vice president for Roosevelt his first two terms? Do you remember?
Well, I wasn't quite old enough to be involved.
No. But it was a guy named John Nance Garner. That was his vice president. He served two terms, but he and Roosevelt kind of got crossways on the role of the president. Garner thought, you should step down after two terms. It's time to go home. And Roosevelt said, nah, I want to keep running. So they kind of got cross and they separated. Garner then just retired out to Uvalde, and that's where he spent the rest of his life and everything. So they got this guy named Wallace. They thought Wallace is a guy because he's somewhat of a progressive guy, but they didn't like him too much. He served for 4 years, but at the end of the 4 years, he'd kind of burned all his bridges. He leaned more towards liberalism, and he didn't have the same views about Russia that all the other conservative Democrats and Republicans had. And they're also, the other concern they had was Roosevelt's health was declining, and they didn't want to see Wallace in office at all. So they said, see ya, and they got rid of him. So this is where Truman comes in. So it's 1944. Truman is chosen to be the next vice president alongside Roosevelt. They win and all that kind of stuff, like you know. A mere 81 days later, Truman is going to be president of the United States. And so this is when he starts in. The good part for Truman is that in May of that year, May of 45, that's when we have the victory in Europe, and he's able to sign that, announce that. He actually announced that on his 61st birthday. Kind of interesting. And then he went from there to make the decision about Japan, whether or not to bomb or not. And he was looking at, American lives to save, but in his memoirs, he's also looking at Japanese lives to save, because they thought by a land invasion, it'd be 500,000 or so people that would die. Yes, sir?
Was Truman the one that they actually announced that we had lost?
Yeah, that was his, presidential election, though. Yeah, Dewey beats Truman kind of thing, yeah. But that was going to be in 48 when that happens. This is just someone I was trying to think of in context of us filling some big shoes that Joshua had to do. But chapter 1 starts off by saying, "Now it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' servant, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, cross the Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, to the sons of Israel. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given to you, just as I spoke to Moses." Now, then, this is picking up where Deuteronomy leaves off. And the first thing it says, "Now, it came about that after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, son of Nun." Two things in here, guys. See where it says Moses, the servant of the Lord? We see that appear about 14 times within the book of Joshua. It's only said once, actually twice, of Joshua. Moses and God had this very special relationship. Typically, when it talks about Joshua, my translation says servant of Moses, but in other translations, it'll say aid or assistant to Moses. Joshua hasn't earned that privilege to be called the servant. At least that's the way the commentators believe. He hasn't earned that privilege to be called the servant of the Lord yet. But he's simply going to be referred to as Joshua, son of Nun, at this point in time. But God is rather frank with him, too. I appreciate God talking to him and encouraging him, but he's also very frank. He said, "Moses is dead." What we don't know is 30 days ago, Moses died, and everyone's been in mourning for the past 30 days. But now God's saying, "Look, he's dead. We got to get going. It's time to go." And he's going to go over some promises that he's made to him, like in verse 3, where he says, "Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given to you, just as I spoke to Moses." He goes on to say, "From the wilderness of this Lebanon, even as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, as far as the great sea toward the setting of the sun, will be your territory. No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your lives. Just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall give this people possession of the land which I swore to their fathers to give to them." So he starts out by telling him, be strong and courageous. Why does he have to tell him, be strong and courageous?
Because this is a really intimidating task.
It's an intimidating task, yeah.
Well, if you're preparing him for battle, and he's like, mm-hmm. "See all this? This is yours. No one's going to be able to touch you." And that's like, you want me to take these guys in there?
Well, the other thing that... when I was growing up, whenever they talked about Joshua and the people going into the promised land, it was always the idea of this would be like Christians going into heaven kind of thing. And that's kind of why I learned growing up. Yeah, sorry, Pastor, for the look like that. This was like the allegory to that. The promised land or Christians going there. But in reality, this is more of the Christian walk, isn't it, Rocky? And just us going in, not so much the battles are going to be out there, but God's going to be with us. And the first thing that Joshua is being told by the Lord is, remember those promises? Those are the things I want you to be strong and courageous. Remember those things. So in this first as we look at Joshua entering into the promised land with the people, what I'm hoping to do is kind of draw a parallel between us as Christians in our Christian walk. And so the God tells Joshua to be strong and courageous because of his promises. And again, he's going to reiterate these promises he made to Moses. This is kind of a parallel between what Joshua was told by God and what Deuteronomy had written as far as what God and Moses had talked about. Again, every place that they're set, just as he promised Moses, and Moses, it was told where his foot was set. He talked about the territories, same type of parallel. And then finally at the bottom, no one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. The promise he made to Moses is a promise he's making to Joshua. Same kind of thing. He goes on to say, only be strong and very courageous. Be careful to do all according to the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or left, so that you may have success wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to what is written in it, for then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have success. So the second point, that he tells them, be strong and be very courageous to obey what? God's word, basically, correct? And then he says he wants him to do three things with it. What are those three things he's supposed to do with God's word? Mm-hmm. That's one. Do it. And what's the first thing? You kind of speak it, right? So speak it, meditate on it, and then do it. Now, I'm not preaching anything about prosperous ways and all this kind of stuff if you do these things. I'm just saying that as Joshua was entering the promised land, his focus was to be on God's word, just as ours should be in our Christian walk. He goes on to say, have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. So third, God tells Joshua, be strong and courageous. Do not be, and again, afraid or dismayed. What's another word for dismayed? What's a synonym for that?
Discouraged.
Discouraged, yep. And again, what kind of things would Joshua have to be discouraged about or be afraid of? Yeah, not leaving them.
He's going up against professionally trained armies.
Yep.
And the Jewish nation was not a professionally trained army.
No, they were not. That is correct.
Yeah, a little bit of
what
practice,
else?
But, most of the time, he didn't end up taking the whole region.
No.
The nation are women and children.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to read something. This comes from Deuteronomy, and this is kind of, this is in chapter 32. Let's see. Nope, 31. And in 31, this is when Moses finds out you're going to die. But he's really gracious. He says, I want you and Joshua to come here, come to the tent of meeting, and I'm going to meet with you. Then the Lord said to Moses, behold, the time for you to die is near. Call Joshua and present yourselves to the tent meeting that I may commission him. So Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves at the tent of meeting. The Lord appeared in the tent in a pillar of cloud, and the pillar of cloud stood at the doorway of the tent. And the Lord said to Moses, behold, you are about to lie down with your fathers. Wouldn't that be lovely to hear? You're about to lie down with your fathers, and this people will arise and play the harlot with the strange gods of the land into the midst of which they are going, and will forsake me and break my covenant, which I have made with them. Then my anger will be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them and hide my face from them. And they shall be consumed, and many evils and troubles shall come upon them, so that they will say in that day, it is not because of our God, is not among us that these evils have come upon us. But I will surely hide my face in that day, and because of all the evil which they will do, for they will turn to other gods. goes on to continue on how things are going to be for the people. But Joshua is hearing all that stuff. You think Joshua wants to have anything to do with those people now? He knows if God said Moses is going to die, he's going to die. If he said the people are going to leave and be disobedient once they hit the promised land, are they going to do it? Probably so. Are they going to do it under my watch? I don't want anything to do with that. So I think the tremble, yeah, fighting those soldiers, those other armies, that's one thing. But the discouragement, probably the people themselves. And then there's always living up to the image of Moses and how great a ruler and leader he was. At the end of Deuteronomy, it tells us there was never a prophet like Moses who talked to God face to face. And Joshua knows this, and you want me to follow him? That's tough. And yet God took the time to encourage him, to speak to him, to include him in that conversation. Yeah.
Defeated three or four kings or
mm-hmm.
their armies with just a bunch of
people yeah.
that had no training or whatever.
Just a bunch of his servants and that kind of stuff, yeah.
So, you know, they're not a bunch of
wimps. No, they got an attitude. You're right. Then Joshua commanded the officers. This is where now he's going to be reminding them. Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, pass through the midst of the camp and command the people, saying, prepare provisions for yourselves, for within 3 days we are to cross this Jordan to go to possess the land which the Lord your God is giving you to possess. So at this point, we don't see any hesitation from Joshua saying, well, we'll think about going, Lord, or we'll get everything ready and we'll be 6 months, we'll be ready to go. No, he says 3 days, we're going. He's had enough of this stuff. I appreciate Joshua's fervency in attending to the Lord's commands. But there's this other little parenthesis that takes place. And that's to the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh. Joshua said, remember the word which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, the Lord our God gives you rest and will give you this land. Your wives and your little ones and your cattle shall remain in the land which Moses gave you beyond the Jordan. But you shall cross before your brothers in battle, all your valiant warriors, and shall help them until the Lord gives your brothers rest as he gives you. And they also possess the land which the Lord your God is giving them. Then you shall return to your land and possess that which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you beyond the Jordan toward the sunrise. They answered Joshua, saying, all that you have commanded us, we will do. And wherever you send us, we will go. Quite a statement for them. Just as we obeyed Moses in all things, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Anyone who rebels against your command and does not obey your words in all that you command him shall be put to death. Only be strong and courageous. Again, a statement of encouragement from those tribes that yes, we will follow you. We want you to be a leader. We want you to be strong and courageous. And that's how things were going to be starting out for Joshua. Now that's going to be closing out chapter 1 on this. I know I meant to ask. In that last section where it talked about do not be dismayed, do not be afraid, what are things that we're afraid of? What discourages us? What are our fears?
Changes.
Changes? Yep. What about job security? Like for Mr. Roffitt, he's got a company buying him out. That can be fearful. We watch the economy doing the roller coaster thing, and for you kids, y'all don't care about that, but for us older folks, who have our retirement plan kind of bouncing up and down, it's tough. And then Mr. Ron and Miss Wanda, y'all have a fixed income that y'all have, unless you have some third-party benevolent gifts checking the mail. Yeah. But in all those things, I mean, yes, those are fears that we have, and yet, the thing I wanted to point out is that our focus is on God and not those fears and not those things. We're supposed to be strong and courageous and not worry about those. I shouldn't say not worry about them. Yes, there's a concern for that, but it shouldn't consume us. It shouldn't defeat us. It shouldn't discourage us. Now then, and there's chapter 2. And before I go to chapter 2, what do y'all remember from the first spy story of Joshua? Tell me about that one.
12 spies went in, 12 came out.
Yep.
They said.
And where did they search?
They searched the whole land as far as they
could go. Yep, they searched all of Canaan. How long did it take them?
40 days.
Yes, that's right. That's kind of like the Bible answer for time, isn't it? 40 days. It takes 40 days.
It's not 440.
Yeah. So 40 days they were out there searching and doing all that kind of thing. Now Joshua has this, Joshua remembers that. And he's not going to go down that little rabbit trail again. So he has a different plan. Then Joshua, son of Nun, sent two men as spies from Shittim, saying, go view the land, especially Jericho. So they went and came into the house of a harlot whose name was Rahab and lodged there. It was told the king of Jericho, saying, behold, men from the sons of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land. And the king of Jericho sent word to Rahab, saying, bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out the land. So he sends two guys in, right? And I'm sure Joshua sends his top guys in there to spy out the land, right? My point here is that the guys, yeah, they're supposed to spy in there, and the king knows almost the minute they get there that the spies have been found. And he knows right where to go, too. He goes right to Rahab.
Was that a plan for them to go directly to Rahab? Was that a plan that they just happened?
The guys that I read said that Rahab, I know she was a harlot, prostitute, and that kind of thing. You want to go to the least, the lowest profile area. But the king knew exactly where to go. I doubt Rahab was by herself in terms of that business and that kind of thing. But the king knew exactly where to go, and he found them.
Sounds so, like that the king had a pretty good intelligence.
Yes.
In his old nation to be able to know what was going on that.
And those guys probably weren't the stealthiest. I don't know. It was just funny to. And parked the camel in the wrong place. Okay. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them, and she said, yes, the men came here to me, but I did not know where they were from. It came about when it was time to shut the gate at dark that the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them. But she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them in the stacks of flax which she had laid in order on the roof. So the men pursued them on the road to Jordan, to the fords. As soon as those who were pursuing them had gone out, they shut the gate. Now before they lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. When we heard it, our hearts melted, and no courage remained in any man any longer because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above, and on earth beneath. So this is Rahab's statement now. Yeah, it is amazing that she gleaned all that, because, I mean, she's a Canaanite. She's going to know all the different gods and all this kind of thing.
Well, what better character to be able to put on a tell the king's agents that, you know, outright lie that they had already left, you know, for her to be believable.
Yeah.
God said it in a way that this character wouldn't be able to do that.
There's actually some debate about the whole lying thing in Rahab and that kind of stuff. I don't know if we'll have time today to talk about it, but that's a whole topic to itself, which is great, Rocky. Thank you. But again, this was her statement of faith. And how else do we know Rahab? Where else does she appear in the scriptures for us? Two other places. She's in the family tree, right? Who is she going to be the father, the mother of? Excuse me.
Boaz.
Yep. And her husband was?
Judah, but I don't know.
Salmon is his name, but that's okay. That's not. Yeah. But that's how Rahab is going to fit further into this. But because of her statement of faith, she's also written about in Hebrews as well. In being in chapter 12, the hall of faith. And then actually, she's also referred to by James as well in terms of actions and faith, and faith without works is dead kind of thing. And that's how Rahab is thought of in this terms. She goes on to say, "Now therefore, please swear to me by the Lord, since I have dealt kindly with you, that you also will deal kindly with my father's household, and give me a pledge of truth, and spare my father and my mother, and my brothers and my sisters, and all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death." So the men said to her, "Our life for yours, if you do not tell this business of ours, and it shall come about when the Lord gives us the land, that we will deal kindly and faithfully with you." Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was on the city wall, so that she was living on the wall. She said to them, "Go to the hill country so that the pursuers will not happen upon you, and hide yourselves there for 3 days until the pursuers return. Then afterward, you may go on your way." The men said to her, "We shall be free from this oath to you, which you have made us swear, unless when we come into the land, you tie this cord of scarlet thread in the window through which you let us down. And gather to yourself into the house your father, your mother, your brothers, and all your father's household. It shall come about that anyone who goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be free. But if anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head, if a hand is laid on him. But if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be free from the oath which you have made to swear." She said, "According to your words, be it so." So be it, excuse me. So she sent them away, and they departed. She tied the scarlet cord in the window. They departed and came to the hill country and remained there for 3 days until the pursuers returned. Now the pursuers had sought them along the road, but had not found them. So this is the end of our little narrative and everything. So they swear this oath. The one thing I wanted to say about this oath, let me back up. It says in here, she let them down by a rope through the window. Then it goes on to say, and she said to them, so the guys aren't dangling on this rope while she's talking to them, okay? Y'all kind of get that picture? Yeah. And Pastor, again, this is past perfect or perfect past tense, I think, is what the verb says. But it's like the conversation actually took place first, and then she lowered them down the wall rather than lowering them down and then saying, "No, you're not going to come, you're not going to trick me or anything," right? So just wanted to point that out to you. Let's see. So the points from today's lesson, what I hope anyway we got out of this, is that our Christian life requires strength and courage, similar to what Joshua was facing going into the promised land. Our Christian life, as we live the day-to-day walk, requires strength and courage. This means knowing his promises he's made to us. By knowing his word, we speak it, we meditate on it, and we do it. And then God's presence. Do not be afraid or dismayed. Remember what he told Joshua? He said, "I will be with you. Wherever you go, I will be with you." Quite a comforting statement, considering how vast that land was to them. And he reminds them, don't be afraid or discouraged. From Rahab, or from just as a general statement, Joshua and Rahab were ordinary people that God used for extraordinary tasks. I had y'all see that, you know, Joshua was from the tribe of Ephraim. Ephraim wasn't the biggest tribe. It wasn't the Lion of Judah and all this kind of stuff that everyone gets pumped up about. He was just from the tribe of Ephraim. Rahab was a harlot, a prostitute. And yet God used them for extraordinary purposes.
Was Ephraim the tribe that helped, that stayed back and wouldn't go through with the rest of them? Or which tribe was that?
Manasseh? It was a half tribe of Manasseh. Manasseh was the one that was split up. I just finished up what they chose to be strong and courageous. Just like our Christian walk, everything's a decision, and they chose to be strong and courageous, and God honored them immensely. And that's all I have for Joshua today, guys. Do y'all have any questions or anything like that?
Did you give us the answers for 6, 7, 8?
Nope. God promised Joshua that he will be with him. Here we go. I can do this real quick. Oh, you got my... Aha! You had the cheat copy. And the one-eyed Jack here.
I'm sitting by myself. There's no other paper to look at.
God promises Joshua that he will be with him wherever he goes.
Yeah, like that was
the people of Israel requested that Joshua be strong and courageous. And Rahab's confession of faith acknowledges that he is God in heaven above and on earth below.